We're nearly there yet, Glyn. We're nearly there.
Nearly there? Nearly there. Where?
Nearly up there.
I hope so, because I'm getting out of breath. You know, I'm nearly 50 this month.
Nearly 50?
Yeah.
You poor old sod.
Old man.
I was going to say I'm near 70, but I'm not yet. But, on the wrong side of 60.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is...
Oh, we're getting too old for this now.
This is hurting. But... we're not going to tell people where we are we?
No, we don't want to spoil the surprise just yet.
Right.
But let's just say it's quite steep. Welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, where we talk about things in Wiltshire that are relatively hidden. My name is Glyn Coy, and I'm the person behind this podcast. And with me, as always, I have my podcasting buddy.
Paul Timlett, back from France.
And you remembered your name.
I did, this time. No prompts.
Yeah, this is slightly unusual. We're taking advantage of the time of year and actually recording this outside. So if you hear ambient sounds of birdsong and aeroplanes and countryside, it's not my fancy editing that's putting it in. We are actually outside,
and it's the, well, let's say howling gale. It's quite windy where we are. We're still not going to tell you where we are.
No,
you have to wait for that. But it's a bit breezy up here, so hopefully the mics don't pick up too much of that.
Yeah, well, we are at the top of a hill.
Yes.
Oh,
you've given the game away.
Well, there's many hills in Wiltshire, aren't there?
But yeah, so it's been a month since the last one, so this is episode 36, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'm losing count now.
Yeah, a month since the last one, during which, Wiltshire-wise, I've done absolutely nothing because I wasn't here. I was in France for a month.
Yeah.
So it's all down to you. What have you
all
been up to?
All down to me. Oh, I've been out and about, doing lots of walking, taking advantage of the long nights and doing a little bit of exploring. I did a nice walk the other week around Bowood. Trying to avoid paying to get in because I'm a real skinflint. But yeah, I started that one in Calne and walked, did a circular walk through the estate. That was quite pleasant.
Yeah, that was. I enjoyed that blog, and the photographs were good as well. But people were saying that it was a shame about the, you had to walk on the A4, didn't you, for a stretch?
Yeah, that was really annoying because I couldn't find another way back that was legal. Maybe I think there is a way I could do it. I could extend it to the old railway line. It would add an extra couple of miles to the walk. But yeah, anything to avoid that. That A4, it was nuts.
Oh, it's a horrible road, isn't it?
Speeding, loads of bad traffic going down that hill. I think it was to Black Dog Hill. Really bad.
But somebody said on the Facebook group that he thought there was a way round and some footpaths. So probably, you know, more scrutiny of the OS map and see if we can piece something together.
But it's a bit like... Bowood Estate is a bit like any of these other estates. Fonthill's the same. It feels a bit manicured.
Yeah.
It's very well looked after. The signage is fantastic around the rights of way. Yeah, it's a nice place. I mean, you can walk around the grounds via the rights of way.
Yeah.
So it is worth trying to do that to get a glimpse of it. You can, of course, pay to go in, but it's not cheap.
No. Well, it's a big old house, isn't it? It takes a lot of maintaining.
Yeah. But they open up... the other thing I've been doing lately, they open up what they call the woodland walk around this time of year for the rhododendrons and bluebells. I think it's closing this week, but I've been there a few times. I think it's about £7 to get in.
And is that part of the open gardens thing?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Because we'll talk about it in a minute, but we did the walk at Fonthill the other day, didn't we? And somebody said then that the Fonthill Abbey, the old abbey, where Beckford built his tower, that they'd had an open garden thing in May, which managed to miss as well.
Well, these open garden things are interesting because I drove through Steeple Ashton last weekend to get to Pickett Hill for a walk. And Steeple Ashton, literally, it was rammed. I've never seen anything like it. There was just cars parked the whole length of the roads going in and out. It was absolutely rammed and it was open gardens.
Those gardens. Yeah. And that's where the villagers generally open all their gardens up, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do that in Shrewton as well. Yeah. Not quite sure when it is.
I'm not sure they'd do that in Trowbridge. My garden's not too much to look at.
No, nor mine. It'd take you about 30 seconds to walk around it. But, yeah, so that your blog, the Bowood one, what I didn't realise was that part of the Wilts and Barks Canal is up there as well.
It goes right through Calne.
Yeah. So I knew there were other branches of it, but that, from your photographs, that looks to be in pretty good order.
Yeah, there's
that's
a section.
Restored, isn't it?
There's a section that's still got water in as you walk down, but then you get to the end and it sort of peters out and they filled it in and put like what looks like a fake barge on the top there. It looks realistic, but when you get up close, it's not actually in water.
But as we talked about with the Laycock walk, so we walked past the Wilts and Barts Canal there, which has been beautifully restored, but quite relatively short stretch, maybe a couple of miles. But their plans are huge. You know, they're going to restore the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it was only afterwards I realised how much of it there was. That's a massive job.
Yeah.
And they're going to need a lot of money.
Yeah.
Other walks. Whilst I was away, Elaine Perkins did a nice walk. I called it, well, we called it the, I think, a short walk in the Vale of Wardour, but it was around Tefont Magna and Tefont Evius, or Evius, how you pronounce it. So that was, that'll be a nice walk, a short walk, because a lot of the walks we tend to post tend to be long on the longer side, don't they? But that was, I don't know, 4 or 5 miles, and very easy, so pretty much anybody could do that, you know, who's got a reasonable level of mobility and fitness. But beautiful part of the world. And of course, that's where we were just up the road the other day, weren't we? For the museum walk.
Yeah, the first one of the year.
Yeah.
Around the Font Hill Estate in the evening. Very pleasant. It's nice walking at this time of year in the evening when you can get the nice weather.
Yeah, and it was very quiet, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Apart from the pub. Pub was rammed, wasn't it?
The pub was...
The Beckford Arms.
And I don't think we came across another person on the walk. We came across a dog, but without an owner.
That's right.
But no people.
But what do we have, 9 people for that?
Yeah, there were a couple of other people that booked but didn't make it on the day. But I mean, I've been doing quite a lot of exploring in the evenings around the Avebury area lately. And I tell you what, Avebury is fantastic in the evening. Nobody's there.
No.
You have it to yourself.
Well, when we did that, was it our first outdoor recording? Or one of the first outdoor recordings we did was up on Fifield Down, and we parked at Avebury, didn't we? And sort of went up in the evening and ended up on Fifield Down in the dark almost.
Yeah. I remember that evening spending 2 hours fruitlessly searching for a stone.
Searching for a stone which we never found.
Even though we had an Ordnance Survey map reference and the Ordnance Survey maps on our phones, we got to the place and there was no stone there. So what can you do?
But I don't recall seeing anybody up there then either. It's very, very quiet. Mm. And of course the light is incredible in the evenings. Yeah. Early mornings and evenings.
Yeah.
Well, you and I follow each other on Facebook, as you saw from my photographs from France. I got in the habit of getting up early in the morning and doing a walk then, because it didn't feel quite so early being an hour on.
Yeah.
So what would have been 6 o'clock in the morning here, there was a bit more reasonable. And I do like the early mornings, but don't do enough of it. And it was just stunning. Every morning there was mist and the sun rising, you know, blazing through the mist. Should do more of it, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, where are we?
Well, we're on a hill.
Yeah.
Let's give a few clues. I can see a Jubilee beacon.
Yeah.
Which, at the time of recording, would have been lit last night.
Yeah.
Because this is Friday morning. Beyond the Jubilee beacon, I can see King Alfred's Tower.
That's it. Yeah. Off in the distance.
And behind me, I can see Warminster.
And we can see the Longleat Estate.
Yes. Which narrows it down a bit. So come on.
Yeah, we're in Wiltshire.
Guess. We're actually at the top of
Coalkitchen Hill.
Coalkitchen Hill.
257 metres.
Yeah.
Is that right? If I remember right.
Right by the trig point, actually.
257 up, yeah. Standing right by the trig point. And there's something rather unpleasant that's been deposited on the top. And we're scratching our heads wondering what it is, but I'm not going to sniff it. It's actually, it could be an owl pellet.
It does look like a pellet of some kind. Yeah,
somebody's just put that there.
Yeah.
But, unless it was an owl with a very good sense of aim. But, yeah, we're going to go and find somewhere to sit, and we'll keep on talking when we get over there.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go. So I guess one of the hazards of trying to do an outside recording is finding somewhere to actually position yourself without looking like an idiot.
Yeah, we've had a bit of a false start, so having made our last address from the trig point on top of Cold Kitchen Hill, we decided to go down to the Long Barrow, and we thought that'd be lovely sitting on top of the Long Barrow, because last time I came here it was all beautifully mown, and it's now about head height in, well, my head height in grass.
It's the grass must be about 3 foot tall.
Yeah, as I said, head height. That would be Tick City up there, and as I said, when we're up there you'd be all right, because I just attract all the ticks, so you'd be tick free.
Yeah,
I'd spend all night picking them off.
So the funny thing is that we're thinking, where the hell are we going to do this recording where we can get a bit of shelter and a bit of time, and we just stumbled across what feels like we're sat in somebody's garden with wooden table and chairs while we're having a cup of coffee. Because there's some kind of a shooting lodge up here.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who's read the Deverell's blogs, I think we did two, the podcast. Did we do a podcast, Matt? I can't remember if we did or not.
We did, yeah. We did.
But I think I called it, in the blog, I called it a man cave, or a bolt hole. So there's a great big sort of wooden structure here. And it's obviously for the local shoot. So we're sitting in the sort of grassy area at the front of that, where there's tables and chairs all laid out, presumably for the Jubilee frivolities last night, because there's a lot of empty bottles of champagne. So if anybody's listening to this and this is their hut, we're terribly sorry.
I hope you didn't mind.
But we'll leave it as we found it. But we're just trying to sit with our backs to the wind so that we don't get too much wind noise. But it's a shame, because we're sitting here looking at the Long Barrow, which is it's Neolithic, isn't it?
Yes.
And he's looking at his notes. Yeah, dates back. It's a chambered tomb. Dates back to between 3,800 and 3,700 BC, and it's huge. I mean, it's 70 metres long, 27 metres high.
That's right. And it's one of these things that you don't really appreciate the size of it until you actually go and stand right next to it.
No, that's right. And I've just got the dimensions wrong. I said it's 27 metres high. It's not. It's 4 metres high, 27 metres wide. But, yeah, and from this side, there's the ditch there. Obviously, they dug the material out to build the mound. So it really does. I mean, it's a fraction of the size it would have been when it was first built, but it's so impressive. And I think, again, as you said in the blog, David Abrams on Instagram, the guy who sort of does a lot of drone shots of hill forts and burial mounds, he's got a terrific shot of this. And from above, I mean, and it's almost perfectly sort of rectangular, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
You don't get any sense of that now, because it's totally overgrown.
But you can see it from miles away, because I've noticed when I've been walking over in Scratchbury Camp, which is way over that way towards Warminster, if you look across here, you can clearly see it.
Mm.
It's visible from miles around. And of course, when it was, you know, newly built and standing proud in the landscape, it would have been a pretty impressive sight.
And as we were saying up at the, as we were walking down from the trig point towards the burial mound, you couldn't see it at all.
No.
So from the top of the hill, it's completely obscured.
Yeah, it's just below the summit. So it's obviously meant to be seen down that side of the valley.
Yeah, from the Wylie Valley, and the hill's the other side. And it certainly would have been. And as we've said numerous times before, when it was first made, it would have been pristine white before it became overgrown.
But of course, up here as well, I mean, we've got Neolithic, which goes back as far as, you know, you can do really in the sort of post-Ice Age Britain. But of course, there's also the remains of a Roman temple up on this hill as well. This has been, you know, used as sacred ground for thousands of years.
Yeah, so that's a place called Whitecliff Down, which is the other side of the hill that we're sitting here looking at. So what I was reading, it describes a Romano-Celtic temple. I actually copied something I'd read. I hadn't quite realised from when we did the blog and the podcast. I don't remember reading this, but I'm going to read this bit out about a description of what is at Whitecliff Down. It says the monument includes a Romano-Celtic temple on the site of a late prehistoric midden, and a midden being effectively a rubbish tip, all situated on the summit of Whitecliff Down. The site commands extensive views over rolling chalk country to the south, and to the west, because from up there you can look over towards Long Knoll and Little Knoll and Alfred Tower, and we'll see, Alfred Tower wouldn't have been there in those days. So the temple is visible on aerial photographs as a series of soil marks revealing the outline of a square building 50 metres by 50 metres. So that's what he interpreted as the temple precinct. But the whole site was much, much bigger than that. I mean, 50 metres is big enough. But it's just part of a much bigger site. And there's another mound over that way, which I don't recall seeing, but maybe David Abrams has got a photograph of it. It's a low oval mound, this describes it, 40 metres long, 28 metres wide. So they're pretty big structures. But that mound has been excavated, whereas the one that we're looking at, the Neolithic mound, I don't think it has been excavated, if memory serves. But the other one, excavated 1803, 1893, 1924, and the list of objects, which I guess might sort of point to its sort of role as a midden. I mean, it's incredible. Painted plaster, brooches, fibulae, not quite sure what fibulae is, can't remember. Tweezers, spoons, bracelets and coins dating from the late Iron Age to the late Roman period, which were probably votive deposits, is what it says here. Mound was also found to contain human bone from at least two individuals, as well as Iron Age and Roman pottery and animal bone. So again, it's sort of, as we've talked a lot about these places, you know, all these different settlements that weren't necessarily occupied concurrently, but, you know, historically a very significant part of the world.
The thing about Iron Age middens that puzzles me is that when you go through the list of stuff they found, the bits of rubbish and bone, and obviously there's been some partying going on for years in these places, but you always seem to find something human. And I think, what's that poor bugger done to be chucked
in a rubbish
bin? Whether someone's been murdered and bumped off, it's intriguing, isn't it?
It's like being thrown in landfill, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's probably very good reason for it. And whether the bones predated the midden.
Yeah.
Maybe it subsequently became used as a midden. Because when you look at, you know, going, these things, you know, could have occurred over millennia.
Yeah.
You think, well, you know, what's been chucked around here 1,000 years, 2,000 years ago, you know, you wouldn't know.
But there's a couple of enormous middens that have been found in Wiltshire. There's one at Potton,
yeah.
And the other one, I think, is at East Chisenbury, way.
Yeah.
Which have been excavated. Both of those have been excavated, and the sheer size of them is incredible.
Well, you and I are just talking about a book I'm reading at the moment. Is it Francis Pryor or? But that's his name, isn't it?
Yeah, Francis Pryor.
He
used to be on Time Team.
Time Team, right. So Scenes from Prehistoric Life, where he tries to sort of bring these different places alive. But it's a common theme in that book, you know, sort of middens that have been found across the country. Real rich source of information. But we haven't come up here to talk about the Deverells in this area? Well, no, because we've done that to death, haven't we?
We've already done that. I checked back, and right at the beginning, we did two on the Deverells.
Yeah.
And actually, the listening figures for those are really high. So it's obviously we've done these to death. But it is nice to actually sit here amongst it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I can't begin to describe how pleasant the views are around here. 360 degrees.
Well, apart from the big lump in front of us. But
well, yeah, apart from the hunting lodge.
And the hill there. But, yeah, I mean, the trig point is the place to be, isn't it? Which is just, I don't know, half a mile away from where we're sitting now. But, yeah, the views as ever up here are just incredible. It's a shame. Well, the weather could have been better. It's a bit grey now, and we're hoping that the rain will hold off.
A little bit of blue coming through. I think it might brighten up this afternoon.
I think it's forecast to rain this evening. But anyway, what have we come here to talk about?
Well, funnily enough, we've come here to talk about Groverley Wood.
Yes.
So the question I'm asking now is, why don't we go to Groverley Wood then?
I just fancy coming here.
Yeah.
You can probably see it from here.
You probably could, actually, yeah.
That is that, I'm pointing so people can't see this, but is that Great Ridge over there? See the forest stuff on
it? Yes, it must be.
But so Groverley Wood is probably slightly hidden beyond the hills.
Yes.
Between here and the A303.
Yeah.
We can hear voices. I don't know if we're about to get caught by the owners of this place, or it's just walkers.
Yeah.
But I suppose we can keep going until we get thrown off. But originally we planned to talk about the walk that Stu and I did. I don't know, 7 or 8 weeks ago to Groverley Wood, which did generate a lot of comment and interest because of who we met up there. But a lot of Groverley Wood is, everybody knows it, and it's hardly hidden. There's an awful lot of hidden places within the woods, and there's a lot of great stories about it. There's a lot of mystery about it, and it's one of Wiltshire's biggest forests. And so there's always new things to find. And we certainly found some amazing stuff when we went. But there's, so you can follow along. There's, I wrote a blog about this, and I think I put the route map up there, so you can, I'm not going to go turn by turn, but just sort of talk about some of the highlights, because we parked at the lakes at Langford, at Little Langford Lakes.
Right, yeah.
Because I'd not been there for years, and nor had Stu, in fact, and he said he fished there, and I think I went there when the kids were young, and they're now grown up. And they've done an awful lot of it, they've done a lot of work at Little Langford Lakes. So if you haven't been for some time, it's well worth a visit. And there's a great cafe now, which they were just finishing off when we were there. There was a bit of building work going on, but Stu's been back since and said that it's all finished now. So the cafe is all sort of pristine and new and looking fabulous. But we sort of sat on the deck there with a very nice cup of coffee and cake and looked at the water, which is just at your feet, and just watching the bird life. And to be honest, I could have spent all day up there.
Yeah, it's tremendous. a bit of a bird watcher's paradise up there. They have huts where you can sit with your
telephoto lens and the hides, and you can
photograph birds and stuff.
And the white-tailed eagle was sighted there a few times. The ones from the Isle of Wight.
It's a Wiltshire Wildlife Trust reserve, isn't it? I think I'm not sure what it used to be. It's only within the last 50 years that it's been converted.
Were they gravel pits?
Yeah, I think so.
Imagine gravel pits.
They were industrial at some point, but they've been converted into this nature reserve, really, and it's become a bit of a sanctuary for birds.
Yeah.
Nice place to visit.
And people who like coffee and cake.
Yeah, indeed. Last time I went there, they didn't have the cafe.
It was so new, they were still building it. In fact, the toilets were just a couple of portaloos. So I gather that's all done now. And so it's a really great facility.
Yeah. But I think I wrote about Groverley a few years ago
on the website.
When I drove up the road all the way into the wood.
Yeah.
Where you can park just by the Roman Road.
Yeah.
And I got one of those situations where I didn't have a clue where I was going and I got lost. Easily done up there.
Well, it is. There's a lot of tracks up there. And I don't know how many of them are public rights away, but the Roman Road obviously is a byway, so you could drive along it, although you will come to a dead end.
I was trying to find Little Langford Down, which used to be a Wiltshire Wildlife Trust reserve, but was given back to the landowner.
That's right.
And it's a bugger to get into now.
Well, it's actually it's managed by, or access is managed by, Natural England, so they're responsible for making sure that access is maintained. Because of course you've got Groveley Castle, I think it's called, up there.
Yeah, that's a Nine Age Hill fort.
Yeah, which is sort of off limits, but you, I mean, if you wanted a trespass, it's literally 50 feet from the open access area to the castle.
Yeah.
Or you can just admire it from the bits where you're allowed to go. Yeah, Stu and I didn't go there this time. We came up from Langford Lakes, so left the car there, which is perfectly fine, because I think there is a sort of public car park as well as for the lakes. And we sort of just headed straight up the escarpment up the hill. And on the map, I'd seen there was a place called East Castle, which is a sort of ancient monument, scheduled monument, and I don't really know what it is. It's either an Iron Age or a Romano-British enclosed farmstead. But again, it was slightly off the track. It meant straying off the public right of way by about 50-100 metres. And to be frank, I don't think there's an awful lot to see. So we just sort of admired it from a distance. But I mean, you could barely see it. Anyway, we sort of headed up to the edge of Groveley Wood, and then we sort of headed east. So we reached the edge of the wood, and there's a public right of way which heads east, so you're heading back towards Wilton, that direction, and we kept on the edge of the wood. And the reason we went up there, so it was a bit of a sort of bird watching day, we were hoping to see goshawks, which frequent Groveley Wood and also Great Ridge, mate of mine said he'd seen them up there just before our visit, so we were more in hope than anything else. That's what we went there for. Anyway, we kept to the edge of the wood, and then eventually we sort of wended our way onto the Roman Road, and walked along that for a stretch. And I was just yesterday, I spent, I do a bit of homework to do these things, and I was trying to remember what that Roman Road was, which one. And I started researching, going out all sorts of blocks. I must have spent an hour just Googling Roman roads in Wiltshire, and in fact right across Britain, and looking at all the different routes and things. But that particular road goes from Old Sarum to the Mendips, to near Priddy. And I think, what's his name? Tom Holland, the historian. I saw that he'd put something on Twitter about it, and he said it's also called the Lead Road, for obvious reasons. Mm. So they were, the Romans were transporting lead up and down that road. But it's been an ancient route for something like, I've read something about 7,000 years people have been using that. So it's very important route across the country. So our plan was to just basically trudge back west, heading west again.
But that Roman Road, it seems to peter out.
Yeah, it does.
And gets lost around Pertwood.
Yeah. Yes.
Because it comes through, it carries on through Great Ridge.
Yeah.
Drops down to Pertwood and probably
comes... Of course, if we turn round, we can see Pertwood.
Yeah. It probably comes... They think it came through Brixton Deverell.
Yeah.
To the Ford.
Yeah. No, Kingston Deverell.
Kingston Deverell, I can always get that Deverell's mixed up.
Yeah, very easy.
Brixton, Kingston Deverell. But of course, we don't know for sure. But yeah, that Roman Road, it's probably...
We're probably looking at it somewhere down there.
Yeah.
And of course, that's the Ford there was supposedly where King Alfred rallied his troops before.
Yes.
Going on to Eddington. Now what I thought you were going to say was So the Roman Road through Groveley Wood, in large part, is tarmacked, and I'll come on to the reason why. But if you follow it all the way to the end of the wood, and eventually you reach the road that comes up from Wiley and heads over to Dinton, and it just, if you were to try and, say, drive it in a Land Rover or something, you would find that the road just, that peters out. And you just can't get through. which is, I think, quite a good thing. Otherwise, you get people roaring through there. So we walked along that way a little bit, and we sort of, bearing in mind we were up there looking for goshawks, and we saw something. We thought, God, is that a goshawk? And there was this bird sitting on a piece of wood or a branch, and we edged closer and closer, and it must have been about 100 metres away, and we were getting closer and closer, and it just wasn't moving, and we were both looking at it through our binoculars, and it just wasn't moving, and we just didn't know. And as we got closer and closer, we realised it was a plastic pigeon, and it was being perched on this branch. And
so you two are obviously amateur bird watchers.
No, we just need better binoculars.
But, ooh, look at that one, Paul.
Yeah, yeah. But
is that a goshawk?
Thankfully, nobody saw us. We're complete idiots of ourselves. So anyway, we got to where this pigeon was, and we could hear a chainsaw. And if you look at the blog on the website, you'll see some photographs. And there's this kind of, it reminds me a little bit of where we're sitting now at somebody's table and chairs in this, what looks like somebody's back garden. There was a table and a bench sat up, and in like a little, like a, almost like a pergola. So we thought, well, you know, can we, it was coffee time, so we thought, should we sit down here and have a coffee? And we could hear this chainsaw off, so we thought, oh, bugger it. So we made ourselves comfortable and drinking our coffee, and then the chainsaw stopped, and this guy sort of appears from the forest.
I'm just trying to picture the scene. You're in the middle of nowhere.
Pretty much.
In a peculiar enclosure where there's all sorts of strange carvings, and a man appears from the wood with a chainsaw.
And a banjo.
I've seen that movie.
Yeah. And it didn't end well, did
no,
it?
No, it didn't.
But this guy sort of came over and said, oh, is it all right if we sit here and have our coffee? And he said, yeah, that's what it's for. He said, I made all this. And he said, that's why I made it, so people can sit there. And, you know, cut a long story short, this guy was introduced himself as Jerry Faithful. And what a top bloke. I mean, we sat and talked to him for, oh, I don't know how long. Time just sort of scampered by. And really, really interesting bloke. And again, if you look on the website, he let me take his picture. Jerry was actually born in Groveley Wood. And he was born in a little cottage up there. And Jerry, I don't know, I'm terrible at guessing people's ages. I would say he was older than me. I mean, maybe he's 70, or maybe he's just not worn very well and he's 35. But he looked older rather than younger. So I'm trying to get a feel for when he would have been born up in Groveley Wood. And his family rented the cottage from the estate that owns it, the Wilton estate, I think. And at some point in the past, it was bulldozed. So he said, you know, my childhood home is now in a pit. And he sort of pointed. So it's in a pit over there. But he's always had this sort of great attachment to Groveley Wood, and he knows an awful lot about it, which was what made him so interesting. And basically, he works up there. And he, you know, with his chainsaw, he makes incredible sort of statues and carvings. And when I asked if I could take his photograph, he was a bit hesitant, and he said, "Well, what are you gonna do with it?" So I explained about Hidden Wiltshire, and eventually he sort of said, "Well," he said, "Yeah, that's all right." I said, "What, you know, what's your concern?" And he said, "Well, during lockdown," he said, "there was loads of people coming up here. I think we all heard about some of the stories of people going crazy up there," and he said one of the local villages put something on their Facebook site about him and, you know, his carvings and all the rest of it. And he said people came up here and they took them. They stole the stuff. And he said, I don't sell it. He said, I just make it for people's enjoyment. But people felt that they could just walk away with this stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say exactly where he was. He's in Groveley Wood, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
Yeah.
But having sort of posted the blog, one or two people said, oh, you met Jerry. And so I think he's a bit of a well-known character. But as we were talking, one of his great areas of interest is the American presence in Groveley Wood during World War II. And he said that, so he's been doing a lot of research in this, and he said that the Americans moved into Groveley Wood, and he said September 1942, but I read somewhere else it was 43. But I don't know who's right. But basically what they used the wood for, because obviously a great tree cover, they could, the Americans could store stuff up there unseen from above, and basically use it as a huge munitions store. And they stored something like 20,000 tons of explosives up there. And I did also read some stories from sort of local papers and things of explosions. So these are stories from the time. And there was one about a couple of guys from the RAF were killed in an explosion up there. But anybody's walked along that Roman road, if you keep your eyes peeled, there are some bunkers, and they're becoming more and more overgrown. And I always thought they were sort of air raid shelters, but Jerry said they were fuse bunkers. So this is where they kept the fuses. So obviously you keep your fuses away from your munitions.
Yeah.
And apparently there are three fuse bunkers, although I've only ever found two. But you can go in these things, and you know, in various sort of states of repair. But one of them handily says, I think it says bunker over the doorway. But you can go in, and there's this sort of graffiti from the Americans during the war. But one thing Jerry wasn't, he said, I haven't been able to find out when the Americans actually left.
Mm.
So, you know, one would assume 44, 45, maybe later. It was, and I'm sure he said that they also used to store a lot of vehicles up there. And so going back to the Roman road and why it's tarmacked or concreted, this is why. So they could get the vehicles. They used, they used to come into the old station, the railway station at Wylie, and blow them up into lorries and take them up into to Groveley Wood.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to grab my coffee, so I'm going to rustle around here and pour myself some more coffee. But he also sort of told us some of the stories of, you know, sort of folklore and some of the sort of creepy stories. But Jerry, bear in mind, part of what he does is to sort of clear up fallen trees. And I think he's sort of paid by the estate to do this. And there was an awful lot of fallen trees, as you can imagine, in a forest of that size. And the estate came to him and said, Jerry, I know you've heard of it, the four witches trees, the witch trees, which are more over towards Wilton than where we were. And there are four beech trees, and the story goes that there were that the witches were four girls, four women from Denmark, and these were the Hansel sisters, and they moved from Denmark and they lived in Wilton. And there was, in 1737, there was an outbreak of smallpox, and these four women were blamed for the outbreak. So basically they took the four women up to Groveley Wood and bludgeoned them to death and buried them. And they either planted beech trees over each grave, hence the four witches' trees, or the trees just grew by chance later on. But one of them was rotting and in pretty dangerous state of repair. And Jerry was asked by the estate if he wanted to sort of go and take the tree down and obviously use the wood. And he refused, because he said, you're kidding. He said, you know, this... tempting fate, and he was because all the stories and, you know, the hauntings, all the rest of it, and he wouldn't touch it.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they did with the tree, but there's all sorts of. I mean, if you Google, you know, Groveley Wood hauntings, there's just loads of stories about it, and you can imagine why and where these stories come from. If you find yourself up there, you know, in the dark in particular, it's a pretty spooky place. And there's stories of, you know, old women moaning and crying up there, and I'm sure it all has rational explanations, but I'm not going to go and find out.
Yeah, there's funny things about woods. I mean, there's a wood just behind us over there. That's Southley Wood, just outside Warminster, and that's where Robin Hood's Bower is, which that's is right, an yeah. extremely creepy place. I would not want to go there at dark.
Well, it's bad enough in daytime, isn't it?
I know. You get underneath those monkey puzzle trees and they block out all the light.
Yeah.
Very creepy.
And then you've got all the votives up
there. All the pagan stuff and wicker circles, all sorts of weird stuff.
But, so I have been to Jerry's sort of yard before, but not met him. And I took quite a few photographs of, I was up there on my own one day and took quite a few photographs of just the little, you know, sculptures and things. I mean, he's a real craftsman. I mean, incredible. Yeah. I mean, I think I called the blog Grovely and the Woodsman or something like that. And he really is a proper Wiltshire woodsman. And he's got a great Wiltshire accent. Lovely, lovely bloke. I mean, if you happen to bump into him, you know, it's well worth stopping and having a chat.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will. I'm going to dig out some more of those photographs and just put one or two of them up there. I think what people were stealing, the people that came up to steal things, were he had some old, I don't know if ammunition boxes or toolboxes, but he would find those and he would, you know, restore them and paint them and make them into sort of really lovely works. And he would just leave them up there and then some buggers go up and steal them. Right?
Yeah.
Just awful. But there's also, I mean, there was a wooden daffodil that he carved and painted it all sort of yellow and green, and you know, there's birds and things that he's carved. I mean, absolute craftsman, amazing bloke. But from there, having sort of left Jerry, we just ploughed on down the Roman Road. Remembering that we were always looking for goshawks, that's why we were staying in relatively open rides. And we did come across one of the bunkers and had a route around in there. But right at the very end where it meets, or get just short of where the road comes up from Wiley that I mentioned earlier on, we struck right and basically we were just going to head back down to Hanging Langford and the lakes. But on the way down, you come across two more prehistoric monuments on the way down. Not a huge amount to see. One of them was quite extensive. One of them was called Hanging Langford Camp, which was described in what I've read as an Iron Age to Romano British aggregate village. So I think these are a number of settlements that were there, you know, over a period of, you know, however many hundreds of years. Bear in mind the Iron Age started, what, 500 BC, something like that, up to the Roman time. So maybe, you know, 500 to 1,000 years, different settlements, all occupying the same place, not at the same time necessarily. So, but you've got the earthworks there, lots of earthworks. And for an archaeologist, it must be hell to decipher and pick all this apart and figure out what's what and when it was occupied. But now it's just this maze of earthworks. Unfortunately, it's all in a little wood. So, which isn't open access, but you can stand right by the fence and look into it. And I took some photographs, which are rubbish. That's just all you can see is a slight hump in the wood. So nothing great to see there. But directly, sort of, you know, if you're looking into this wood behind you and down the slopes, you're looking at another prehistoric monument. It's called Church End Ring, which is described as a banjo enclosure. Again, I'd never heard of a banjo enclosure, and Stu was saying it's something that's to describe, you can only see crop marks, I think, certain times. So again, can't see anything on the ground. So we went up to the edge of this wood where Church End Ring supposedly is. But it's at the top of a bottom, a dry dry valley that comes up from Hanging Langford. So you can almost kind of see why it was there and where it sits in the landscape. But again, it's back to that, where did they get their water from up there?
Yeah.
So they must have sunk wells down there must to the groundwater.
There must have been such a tension for them back then, because there was a tendency to build these hill forts and enclosures on higher ground, presumably for protection in some way. But then you've got that battle always of getting access to water as well, so there's a big tension between safety and
Well, of course, the defensive aspect of these things only really develops during the Iron Age. You know, from sort of Neolithic and Bronze Age times, these were, you know, ceremonial places. Which is why they're, you know, they're causeways, they've got, you know, opening, you know, they've got gates where you can stroll in and out. Obviously that's no good if it's defensive. You don't want the enemy strolling in and out. So the defensive aspect was sort of Iron Age. So I mean, I went up to, as you know, to Uffington Whitehorse a while ago. I know it's Oxfordshire or wherever it is. And a huge hill fort. Well, not a hill fort, a huge enclosure up there, you know, with a causeway and the openings. And, you know, people think, well, it was they went up there for defensive purposes, but they didn't. People went up there to have, you know, meetings and ceremonies. And, so, as I say, the defensive bit came a lot later when, of course, you know, perhaps the world was a bit more dangerous and hostile, and perhaps, you know, as people got wind of the Romans coming. Although in that book I was referring to earlier on, he sort of poo-poos that idea and says that actually, you know, people, you know, certainly the higher status Britons probably welcomed the Romans. Because this was new and interesting ideas,
and I've also heard that by the time the Romans came, the hill forts were pretty much out of use, as defensive structures. Yeah. So, it's interesting. I mean, I'd love to know. Obviously, we'd all love to know the true history of the British Isles back in those days, but it's not written down, so we can only guess.
Well, the book, I'll stick a link to it in the show notes, but it's well worth a read. And it, I mean, basically, it goes to a lot of these ancient monuments, and rather than talk, I mean, he's an archaeologist, but rather than talk about the archaeology, which he does in part, he just wants to try and get into the minds of the people.
It's
that
a very human
there.
Book. It's talking about the humans behind all this stuff that they found, and it's fascinating. It really is.
And, you know, just to keep dispelling the myth that even back to Mesolithic, you know, what, 10,000 years ago, these were very intelligent people, very, very accomplished people, great craftsmen, and even, you know, to Neolithic times when they were just starting to cut trees down, and not all the trees, but they cut some tree down to start farming. Some of the structures that they built were, I mean, people today look at it, how on earth did they build that?
Yeah.
And even today with power tools, people, we're really not sure how they did that.
Yeah. And it's quite clear as well that there was, you know, people talk about Roman roads, but a lot of the Roman roads, they were built on top of existing Celtic trackways. There was quite a sophisticated road structure in the UK for transport. And we know because we found links between, for instance, parts of Wiltshire and the communities that were living up in Orkney in the Neolithic period.
That's right.
So there was trade going on even back then.
Trade and ideas, exchange of ideas. But yeah, hence that, you know, the Roman road through Groveley Wood, you know, was there long before the Romans.
Yes.
Sort of looked at it and thought, well, that's a handy route, and that goes exactly where we want to be going, to the lead mines. But so there you go. That's pretty wide ranging today.
Yeah, and the thing is, sitting here as well as you're talking, I'm just sort of glancing around, and in this landscape here, I mean, we were talking about King Alfred earlier on, and of course we know that King Alfred is supposed to pass through this valley, that's the theory, on his way to the Battle of Ethandun.
The Wylie Valley down there,
So we've got the Wylie Valley, and over there I can see Southley Wood. And I talked about Robin Hood's Bower before, but Robin Hood's Bower is thought of as a candidate for the location of Eyley Oak, which is where they camped the night before the Battle of Ethandun. So that would have been just over there.
I can see. So they camped or assembled. And I'm pointing now down at Kingston Deverell with the ford, perhaps.
Yeah.
And then continued on to South Wood, camped there overnight, and then on to the battle the next day at Ethandun.
Yeah, we can just on the hill over there and the rise, you could probably just make out, which I think is Tottenham Wood.
Yeah.
Which is just on Eddington Hill.
Yeah.
So there's quite a view here. And of course, at the far end of the Wylie Valley there, you've got Cow Down, which that has got Iron Age settlements on the top of that. So It's amazing to think now, when this is such a quiet, peaceful place with hardly any people.
Apart from the A303, which I can see in the distance.
Yeah,
which,
you can see, but
the
not
ever-present.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's always been a place for people to live and work. And, you know, there's signs that people have treasured this place for many years. And it's now very quiet. And it's not... I always think of this as quintessential hidden Wiltshire, because it's... You don't get many people walking up here. It's very quiet.
Actually, I'll tell you what I can see, I think. And perhaps when we've finished recording, I'll get my binoculars out. But I think I can see the fake stone circle.
Oh, can you?
Up at Pertwood. And I'm pointing, which is no good to anybody listening. But I can see what look like stones off in the distance. So again, if you listen to that podcast, we talk about the stone circle that fooled a lot of people.
Yeah, there is a stone circle. It's a very authentic looking stone circle as well.
But it was made in the 1970s or the 1990s?
I think it was
like
the 90s. Yeah, there was a festival up there for a few years.
Yeah.
Sort of a green eco-festival. Yeah, ahead of its time, really.
Huge festival.
But yeah, they built, one year they decided to get some proper henge builders stone circle builders set this circle up, which of course is still there.
And what a lot of people don't realise is there's another one out there as well, a smaller stone circle.
Smaller one, yeah.
Which is a bit more difficult to find.
Well, of course, the problem is technically it's private land up there. There's no footpath to get there.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you go up there and have a wander, you'll find it, but you may bump into
the director of security.
South African chap with a gun.
It was more than happy for me to go and have a look.
Yeah. Because the chap that owns Pertwood Farm is South African.
That's right.
He made a fortune down there. He's got a farm in South Africa as well. Yeah. But I remember last year at the Chalk Valley History Festival, I'd stumbled onto him doing a talk in a tent.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. He was talking about him doing organic farming in the Wylie Valley. That was very surreal.
Well, he's the guy that when I met, I've forgotten his name now, the farm worker, when I first found the stone circle, and another of these great encounters. His first name was Chris, and I can't remember his surname, but I remember it was the name of a big haulage company, because he said, no, it's not the same one. Anyway, I was chatting to Chris, and who just worked for the staff and guy, and this is the same guy who said to Chris, because he said there was some possibly hair courses, or they might have just been sort of travelling community up there. And this South African bloke said, well, go and shoot them then. So he said, I can't do that. You know, can't go shooting people.
That's
what we do in South Africa.
Yeah, he thought this in South Africa. But I think it's, but he was saying, I think his daughter was looking after the farm because he spends most of his time in South Africa.
Yeah,
his daughter was looking after the farm, but I think she'd moved on or something. There was some interesting story behind it. But anyway, it was nice to meet him.
And,
And the Chalk Valley History Festival is on later this month, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, the end of June.
Oh, I was trying to go this year. It's not already sold out.
I booked my tickets yesterday on the Saturday. There's plenty of tickets left.
Oh, I might do that then, if I'm around.
Yeah, it's worth a look. The other thing going on at the moment I wanted to do a quick plug for was the Hardy exhibition, which is going on in the two main Wiltshire museums at the moment, in Salisbury and Wiltshire Museum in Devizes. It's also going on Poole Museum and Dorset Museum, but it's a sort of combined exhibition. And I think in Wiltshire Museum, they've got the original manuscripts of Tessa the d'Urbervilles, and in Salisbury, they've got the original manuscripts of Jude the Obscure. So some real fantastic things to go and see.
Are you doing a talk? Something to do with the Hardy thing?
No.
Or did I imagine that?
No, I think you imagined it.
Or maybe it's me.
Somebody is doing a talk.
It's not me.
Wiltshire Museum. It's Harriet Still, who's one of the people behind the exhibition.
Yeah.
Who I've been talking to, actually, because she's doing... I'm not doing a talk, actually. They've asked me to go onto the Hardy podcast.
Oh, that was it. Yeah, that's
because they wanted to have a conversation about the Devil's Den and the Wiltshire landscape.
So
I've been talking to Harriet about that.
Yeah.
And actually, I helped them set up their podcast when they were looking in how to do things. They hooked up with me and said, tell me how to do it, please, Glyn.
Yeah.
So I explained.
I hope you charge them royally.
Well, I should really. I've looked into how much podcast consultants get paid.
Yeah,
we could
a lot of money.
Make a second career out of this.
Anyway, we probably ought to just wrap up.
Yeah.
Just on the subject of museum, the next museum walk, I don't know if it's sold out, but that's Hip and Scombe on Sunday the 12th of June at 2 p.m.
There's still tickets for that available.
Oh, is there? Yeah. And I think we're going to meet at Scott's Paw, aren't we?
Scott's Paw, yeah.
If you look on the map for that, and I'm sure there's a grid reference or something on the Wiltshire Museum
Yes, there
website.
Was a chap from the US who messaged me about that because he's over in the UK at the moment.
All right.
And he's hoping to join us.
Oh, terrific.
He's one of the overseas folks that have bought the Hidden Wiltshire book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I sent that across to him. But he's touring the UK at the moment. So.
Brilliant. And speaking of which, the book, there's still... The first one sold out again, isn't it? There's still copies of the second book available in the shop. And there's plenty of other bits and pieces in the shop, so go and have a look at that.
We've got a discount on the book as well at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Summer discount. So if you use the code SUMMER10 at checkout, you get 10% off. And I think we're chucking in postage as well, so...
Well, it'll never be cheaper.
No, it won't.
Unless we give it away.
And we're not at that stage yet.
No, not quite.
So yeah, if you want to pick up a copy, please do. If you're in Wiltshire, I'll probably hand deliver it to you.
Don't forget how big Wiltshire is.
Yeah, but I like going out on trips. As long as it's not up at, what's that far corner?
Swindon.
No, further than that. That place you went to, Inglesham.
Inglesham, yeah.
That's miles away.
That's right on the border.
Yeah, that's right on, right on the border.
Next episode is, by my reckoning, Sunday the 3rd of July. That will come out.
Yes.
We can't finish without saying thank you to Steve Dixon, of course, for the music, the Holloway at the beginning and the end, as usual. And the middle bit, I thought we used it once before, says he, looking at his notes, eyes looking east. And I picked that one because of the... again, for people who heard the Furze Knoll podcast where we used that, Steve wrote that piece of music about, really for the First World War, when there was, because it was a listening post for the Zeppelins. So that sort of, military sort of connection, Groveley Wood, Second World War.
Got it.
Looking east. It's a tenuous link, I know, but that's why I thought that one. So there you go.
Excellent. So, yeah, we'll be back in a month's time for more fantastic stuff about Hidden Wiltshire. So until then.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.